Welcome to Contagious Podcast, Contagious Conversations for Automotive Innovation. Thank you so much for joining today. I'm excited to have my man, Art Dessen. Art is the VP of Expansion at SpinCar. Man, we get into a lot of really cool stuff today, a lot of his passion for relationship selling, both as it relates on the vendor side, which is where he comes from, but also on the dealer sales side and how he sees some of those things fitting in. But the real meat of the conversation goes to his ideas around merchandising and his passion for a great merchandising experience on dealer websites, and across the e-commerce space. And what I really want you to pay attention to is the relationship he draws between people looking for colleges or students searching out colleges and looking to make that type of quote purchase, because it is a large investment in their own personal space and the cost evaluation, and how that relates to the merchandising and the type of relationship that a potential customer might have with a dealership prior to doing business with them on the sales or variable ops side. So I'm really excited about that. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we will go ahead and get right to the meat and drop in on my conversation with Art. So Art, man, I think the first time I met you, we're talking SpinCar, we're talking co-op, and then I haven't met you before, and we're sitting, and so I'm headed out to Vegas for a digital dealer, and you're sitting around a table of a whole bunch of people. You've got some dealers, you've got some other partners that are on your team, and everybody's just enjoying each other's company, and I couldn't get over the fact that, like, you were the first vendor that I had met, and maybe this is my blindness to the whole deal, that was just like willing to sit around the table with a bunch of people, kick back, and not talk business at all. And it really has changed my mind about how to approach other vendors and other relationships within the industry. And you've given me that impetus to really shift my mindset and my focus, but because of the way that you were managing the relationship with me and also wanting to actually build a relationship. So what's cool is, you know, we've been friends for what, a year and a half, 2 years, something like that. And I feel like you're much more of a friend than a vendor partner. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about how that, like when you started selling stuff and when you started interacting and creating relationships with people, because you manage relationships across the country. So you've got people like me that are 33-year-olds, you got 60-year-olds, you got old school dealer guys, you got new school, you got everything in between. What does that relationship building process look like for you?
Yeah, so I think, so there's kind of like two approaches to, I think how, and I guess it's kind of like vendor to dealership, but it's really just any relationship. There's like two approaches they have that I've noticed. One of which is they try to sell you the product, right? And it could solve like a narrow pain point. Like, hey, my product does this and you need it because you're experiencing this pain, this can solve it. And that's the discussion they have. So it's like, it's kind of superficial. It's not solely superficial, but it's really like it's on the surface, right? So, and that ends up being the relationship, is they only talk about business or product, and then you don't have like the sticky relationship where you're actually sharing thoughtful stuff, or, you know, they call it consultant selling, which I hate that term. But then there's the other approach, which is like you talk about like the vision and where, how you think things should play out and how they should look, and why it's great, right? And you deliver it with convictions. So you're more talking broadly as a 30,000 foot view of like strategy and things that are impactful. And yeah, your products like obviously like get you to that vision, like no shit, but it's more like that's how you develop, I think, deep relationship, is people don't want to be sold, and I don't really want to sell them products either. But if you can start talking about, like, you know, for at SpinCar, maybe we'll talk about merchandising as that keyword. But a lot of dealerships are trying to solve a lot of different things, and if you can kind of get in their shoes and just level up and just be friendly with them and understand, like, as they're, you're not their friend at the beginning, but you're just talking to them normally. You're not using like these big words that you keep hearing, right? Which is like, What are some recent words? You have digital retailing and AI and I don't know. There's so many words, and like these words start being used to like sound like your solution is like this eloquent solution. And it's not. Most of this stuff is pretty basic, but it does its job. So I try to just talk about and connect with like vision. Like, do we have the same vision? Like, not everybody needs specific products, but are you buying into how I perceive things to be in like a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? And I think that like fosters and develops a relationship, and then people can be laid back. And now you're just having a conversation and talking instead of some guy selling you. And like, some people are better than others at like selling. Like, some people sell you the product without really you knowing, but you always have this feeling that like it's this guy that's selling you something. So you miss that connection that you have with somebody that you truly kind of like enjoy talking to.
Yeah. I like to say things like, you know, when the salesperson comes in, and let's just say it's on the vendor side, not on the sell on a car side, but they're like, so we've got this really big data and it utilizes AI to prove a really impressive ROI on the metrics based on your SEO and SEM conversions. And you just drop like 18 words in there and nobody knows what the, what the heck.
It sounds smart on the surface, but you know, like a lot of dealerships ask me like, oh, how many more cars is going to sell me? And I straight up tell them, like, dude, I don't know. Honestly, I have no clue how many more cars it's going to sell you. What I do know is, as a consumer, I way prefer this than that. So like, it's like sometimes it's just logical and you may not need data to make a logical decision. But so I think a lot of people kind of like get stuck in using those words, you know, cloud. Oh, it's in the cloud and it's processed. We have millions of data points. Like, dude, the guy's just looking to buy a Honda Odyssey. It's just, it's not, many times it's not that complicated.
So there's a lot of dealers and salespeople and stuff like that that listen to this. It's not just obviously vendors. So when you think about that, when you take that to the car sale, because you get this too, you have kind of two dynamics that you get to play in. You've either got, you're at a booth at NADA, digital dealer, any of these conferences, and you've got to manage that relationship in a really short time, or you have these longer relationships that you get to go into a dealer, maybe work for a couple months, work on the process, the plan, you know, it building that relationship. But a lot of in the sales environment, it's a very speedy, it's more like you sitting at in the booth, right? And having to do some of these relationship management things. How does that translate for someone that has to do all of that in a really short amount of time, and build this relationship, but also kind of allow the product to flow through that? What I'm hearing from you is that you've got a certain like set of values and beliefs surrounding what you have and what you have to offer and what you have a vision for, and that translates into your communication. So what do you think that looks like for the salesperson or the sales manager that needs to transmit some of that to the potential customer?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I have like a, it's a tough question because it's not really like, there's not like a prescription, like, oh, you have this, here's your diagnosis and here's the prescription for it. And we try to teach that in our salespeople. And, it's hard because it's in a lot of people work because they're in their job and they're just selling and that's their job. And 3, 4, 5 years, they move on to the next thing. It's much like the automotive dealership world where you might have a lot of turnover, especially in like the sales advisor, sales consultant, lease consultant types. So we always kind of work on understanding like philosophically and conceptually what you're trying to do. For us, it's easier, right? For a dealership, they're like selling a car. So to them, they almost like, they have to just sell the product to some degree. Like, here's the car, you're in to buy a car, right? If you call me being a vendor and you say, hey, I'm looking for a 360 solution, I'm honestly probably having a different conversation with you than like if I hold you down by your shoulders and NADA or tie you to the bar or liquor you up. But like in the dealership world, I feel like they come in and they want to buy a car. So you just got to sell them the car. And I was actually reading an article this morning in Harvard Business Review, HBR. It's actually a really good article. And it was like four tips. I forget what the article was called. It was like four tips on improving inside sales productivity or something like that. And it talked about how in like classical sales, which extends to obviously the dealerships of the best salespeople, they have to sell the cars and they have to sell 300 cars a month. I always was like, that's crazy that they sell 300 cars a month and they're only open 24 days a month. Like they're selling like 13 cars every day. Like that many customers walk in. And like, then you have people who sell 600, 800, 900 cars a month, which is really crazy out of one rooftop. But this article talks about like in the classical sales school that you go through, they talk about how you should do the needs analysis. Like, oh, what are you looking for? How do you know? Okay, what's your lifestyle like? And you see a lot of that stuff in Carvana, which is really important, which is trying to whittle down like what this top of the funnel buyer wants by, you know, selecting different dimensions and options. And it says, here are some vehicles that you might be interested in. And this article says actually really effective B2C, so business to consumer salespeople, are very prescriptive. They say, you need this without doing this needs analysis. And their close rate is much higher and they have shorter sales cycle, which I think extends to somebody selling a car. You need that short sales cycle. If somebody who needs a car is buying a car, and you know, like Google study, it says they visit 1.4 dealerships. I think it's the silliest metric, you know, like, okay, just say you visit one dealership, like you don't have to visit 1.4. And so I think like you really have probably one shot. So you need that really short sales cycle. So it is difficult to be like, you have a small sales cycle to sell the car and also potentially develop the relationship. So they feel pretty good about buying a car from you. But I think it's more transaction based in the dealer. I mean, I've never sold a car, but I would feel like it's more transaction, right? If you come in transactional, you come in, I'm selling you the car. I'm like, dude, you need this honesty. You know why? Look at this thing, the door slide, you have a kid, boom, you could put the car seat, you walk in easily. Look at these cameras. It's got like 3/4 angle cameras. It's crazy. And it's only $400 a month. Are you kidding? It's like three dinners. Or if Kyle's with you, it's like, it's one dinner and a bunch of drinks.
Ring it up.
So, but as a vendor,
not a bunch of drinks, but plenty of food, lots of meat. Yeah.
I remember Digital Dealer. On the vet, like on our side, it has to be more what you're talking about, which is like, you still like, especially at trade shows, you need to sell you want somebody to commit to buy the product, obviously. And we're fine selling it the hard way, because we know it's like, we're like convinced it's good. Like, we're not just selling you something because we're there to sell it to you in 3 years and 5 years from now, we're going to move on. Like, we are convinced it's good business. Yeah. So we can pressure. But then, yeah, then you have that weird thing of like, how do you not have these long sales cycle to like relationship sell? Because that's what we often find. Well, I'm relationship selling. That's why it's taking 8 months to sell. And no, I think that's more of an excuse than like a tactic.
You said something there about we're so convinced. One thing that I encourage our general managers to do is like, how do we get every single person in, and we're Mazda stores, how do we get every single person in a Mazda? Because then everybody's convinced. Like, this is the greatest thing on the planet. And I think that that's what you've done a good job at. And with your team is going, no, this is the way. And this is like, you have to be convinced. You have to believe in the product before you can actually share the product in a way that is evangelical. I'll use that word.
Right.
Look, a bird just hit my window. That was crazy.
I don't know where this is raw. The white with everything being white.
Right. Yeah. This is raw.
The ground is the same color as the sky, it looks like.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So let me go at this, and I want to hear about, because you've got this strong belief, and I think you transmit it to your people. And I say all the time, I think dealership websites and automotive websites are the absolute worst websites in all of WWW world, which is the internet. We've done a terrible job at making a terrible experience worse. So we have a terrible showroom experience for like 95% of dealers out there. And we went and said, we're going to make it worse by making a bad online experience. And what you've done is gone, hey, we're going to help make this better by emphasizing the way that we believe you should merchandise. So tell me a little bit about the philosophy behind your belief in merchandising and automotive websites and all that.
Yeah. So if you think about like the consumer's point of view, when he walks into your dealership, it's actually not that bad of experience. And I saw your commercial, the Vroom comeback commercial that you did.
Yeah.
Pretty good actor. You're pretty good. I still feel like so dealerships are trying to move in that direction. They know it's good. Like, I think deep down they know it's good, but something prevents them from making the changes that they need. And I think they have this really deep, ingrained, entrenched way of like thinking about how they should transact and interact with the consumer. So we always talk to them. We always talk about to dealerships about like returning to the basics, which is merchandising, right? And like, if you think about, we actually had a dealership, a group asked me like, how are others doing in digital retailing? Like, I'm thinking about doing this, right? The OEMs are mandating it. It's like, well, most do this. They put in a tool on their website. It's like that little box on the right, and you can check out the car, and it matriculates down to the F&I and everything. But you're selling a $35,000 Mazda. And that's like going to college, right? Like, think about that. That's like tuition at a local state school. It's probably 4 years tuition. And what do? When you go to college, you literally like apply, but then you go visit it. You walk around the campus, you talk to the teachers, you get a feel for it. You look how it feels. And that's school. It's 4 years. This is a car, right? You would think it's much more transactional, but it's the same price point. It's a highly considered purchase. Huh. And most people expect somebody, just like they would go to school, to look at the school online, read up about it. Oh, it's the number one party school. Cool. Apply. And then I'm going to buy my ticket to fly there and attend on September 3rd when classes start. That's not the case, right? It has to start with like, if they're going to buy online, you said you're a single point, but if they're going to buy online and have enough confidence and trust and clarity on the car, they need to fully understand that it's 30, 40. Why are they spending $35,000? And when they walk into the dealerships, it's easy. Right? Because they can be convinced, because they can sit in the car, they can like look around the car. You have a sales guy that shows them the nav. Dude, look at this technology that this Mazda is equipped with. Let's take it for a test drive. They can feel it, sense it, right? All that type of stuff. That's really hard to do online. And so they deploy this digital retailing and they realize, why do only 0.2% like that start that process, complete it? Well, that's good, dude. It's like they're super confused about the car. They don't know what the hell's going on. They have no, there's like 10 different trims for a Tahoe. And they're like, what is an LT from an LTE? Like, I don't even know. And I work like, I seriously don't know the difference between all these trim levels of like Ford Explorers. I have no clue. It's really hard to discern. And we're in the business that we assume they know. Well, it's easy. It's because one has the appearance package and one doesn't. So what the hell is the appearance package? So I think there's a ton of confusion. So I think when you talk about merchandising and you look at somebody like, we always do the example of Warby Parker. They sell like $99 sunglasses, which are like, it's sunglasses, right? It's like, do you like the shade? Cool, buy them. But dude, they have like high res, 360 degree, or sometimes they just have imagery, but it's high res. You can blow them up. You can like see like the detail of a $99 pair of sunglasses. And then dealerships think, oh, well, we could put a tool, a digital retailing tool on my website. And here's a bunch of pictures and here's the pre-constructed VDP that the web provider has kind of forced us into, and cross our fingers that people will buy the car online. And then they're like, what the hell am I paying $1,500 for this digital retailing tool? Like, no one's using it. I think the best analogy is the college analogy. Like, think about how much time is spent figuring out which school you want to go to. And I think that that's the same angle, view, philosophy, whatever you want to call it, that dealerships should employ when they think about how they present, merchandise, position, frame their cars online. Like, you can't just be the same pictures, check it out here, submit a lead. And when you submit a lead, I'm going to try to get you in the dealership. So it's a bit difficult because I don't think there's like a single solution, but I think oftentimes dealerships forget about the importance of merchandising. Like, they want to get to the Z before they do like the basics. And I always use a supermarket example too. Like, what's the difference between a good supermarket and a bad supermarket? They sell the same shit. They're priced the same, right? Like, they have Golden Grahams or whatever it is that you eat, or they sell like bananas, right? Chiquita bananas. It's all the same. It's the way that they merchandise. If you go in there and it's super well merchandised, they have like the pumpkin beer next to the pumpkins, next to the pumpkin seeds. Like, it's really well laid out. And like you sense that and you feel that, so you shop there more frequently. You're more comfortable shopping there.
That's really good. I used to say a lot, I don't want more leads. I want more people in the showroom. And the problem is I think we have these digital retailing tools because we realized we were asking the customer to ask bad questions, but we didn't do anything to change the behavior based on the way that we shared with them information. Like I think of, you know, the best detail pages out there, right? Amazon or, you know, eBay or anything like that. And it's like, it's information overload, but here's the thing. I read it all. I look at all the information. I look at the reviews. I look at the, you know, the details and the features. And I look at, and I watch the video of the product. And I look at all the pictures and then I read down further and I do the compare stacks and all of that before I go make a purchase. And that's like on a $15 thingamajiggy.
Yeah.
And we've got like you said, a $35,000 thing.
And you can easily send it back.
And I can send it back. And I've got a $35,000 thing that I've got, you've got, you're forcing me to make a decision. And now I'm like, I'm going to rip our digital retailing off our website today. I'm not, I'm just kidding. But you're forcing me to make this buying decision with limited facts.
Right. And you're just not going to do that, right? And you know what you're going to do? You're going to seek. There's that other study, and everybody talks about the same studies. Oh, they visit 1.4 dealerships, you know, before they buy a car, or they have 30, you know, that Google study that shows they have like 38, that kind of like circuitous kind of like path they have where they have like 38 touch points. Dude, you know why they have 38 touch points? It's because they got to go to 38 different places to collect all this information to then draw a conclusion as to which car they want to buy.
Yeah.
So every touch point that they need to collect that data that they have is a touch point that you have to then invest in marketing to reach them in that medium, right? Which is why so much money is spent in advertising and marketing. Because it's like, well, I don't know where they are. So let me just throw $100,000 a month in trying to reach them. But think about it like inversely, which is what if they didn't have to go to 18 different or 24 or 32 different publishers or areas to find this information? What if they could find it all in like one vault, one repository that lived and breathed on your website? Because they went to your website for a reason, right? Like you've touched them somehow. When they go to Nelson Mazda Cool Springs, like you're in their consideration set, which is already extremely hard to get into. So you're one of four dealerships or one of four brands or one of four cars they're thinking about buying. So you're better off than most people in your community. But then what happens is they're like, oh, it all looks the same. And that's what the OEMs want. They want you to all look the same because they don't care where the Mazda's purchased. And so to the consumer, it's just, they just rely on price. Who's got the best price? Because it all looks the same. Oh, the car's a commodity. It's the same. So let me just see who's got the best price. But it's not necessarily that. And we tend to see that like a lot of people buy a car. And I think I gave you the example when I bought my Volvo, but a lot of people buy a car that they think has things or that they're sold in it some way because of the price, but they would have purchased another car had they known a little bit more, if they were more educated on that second car. And that's where I think it's really hard to do. Like, how do you educate them, right? Like, how else can we possibly do them if they're not coming into the dealership? Why is your close rate so high when they come into the dealership, right? They're there. You can convince them. You can talk to them. Like you show them and they're like, oh, I get it. This car is sweet. I'm going to buy it.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, and then, and you get to explain your why buys and you get to explain, it's like the best merchandising because they're standing in front of it.
And if they're like, I don't know if I want this car, like it's an SUV, it seems big. Oh, dude, it's not big, it's small. Let's go take it for a test drive. It's like driving a go-kart and then you get him in. So that's really hard to digitize that feeling. So we always tell dealerships, like, you should think about like, how to do those types of things. It's not necessarily just think or any vendor out there, any technology, any merchandising, anything like that, that could get you closer to that point, you should really consider, right? Like allowing them to engage with the car, whatever it might be, like different opportunities to drive engagement, deepen it. That's not the same as what everybody else is doing.
I absolutely love that. Like getting people more information, but not just information, engagement. is really key. You know, we're seeing more people do, this is real talk in automotive. If you just look for a second at the most watched automotive videos on YouTube, what are they? Walkarounds, right? Now they're not even done by people in dealerships typically. They're done by like gearheads and stuff like this. But people are watching
them too. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, people are watching them because they have to go outside of our websites or our marketing to go find this information that they need before making a decision to step in our doors. And we've done a poor job at giving them that information up front. I talk a lot about like innovating the industry and being an industry that people want to be a part of and do business with. And it's really hard to do business with us as an industry because we do. I mean, you just said it. You've got these click patterns that are 38 deep or something. That's exhausting. Yeah. And when I want something on Amazon, I go to Amazon and I figure out if I want to buy it or not. I don't need to go to 18 other places to figure out if it's the right thing. I can go to that place. And you use the example of colleges. I think colleges do a decent job of this too. But I think it's funny, the people that sell the lowest price stuff are really, really good at this. And the higher price stuff, we like forget this mentality that people need all of this information. They need this merchandising. They need this. Yeah. This deeper funnel understanding of what it looks like to own, buy, and utilize this in their daily life. And if we could change that, then we might have customers that are, when we get them to our website, they're like, ah, breath of fresh air, you know?
Yeah. No, you make a good point. So the my thinking as to why like the low price point stuff, like Warby Parker, which is not that low price point, but relative to other sunglasses, they are really like Amazons and all that. Like why they focus so much on like merchandising and the customer experience, where it's like, well, it doesn't matter the customer experience. They're buying a $8 or $20 picture frame, like whatever. But it's so highly transactional that it's repeatable. And I think car transactions are so infrequent on a one-to-one consumer. Like it happens every 3-5 years. So you don't have that volume that experience and like going through that transaction, like a regular retailer site might go to hundreds of thousands a month. You may only go through it 180 times a month. So like that curve of that experience curve of going through it, maybe it takes a million times to go through it until you realize how important it is. They get to it much quicker because they have such high transaction volumes, or the dealership is only doing like 100, 200, 300 transactions a month. Plus you have every single vendor calling you, selling you advertising stuff, right? Like it's all about advertising, and they all walk you through the same, at least in my view, when I'm at NADA, I feel like they all walk you through the same. They visit 1.4 dealerships. So you really need to get in front of them and look at this technology. We can grab that VIN and show it to exactly who's in the market for a Mazda, blah, blah. That doesn't work. Like, yeah, it works to a degree, but like there's way more important stuff. And we always talk about like, do more with what you have. And we look at traffic of a dealership. We're like, dude, you have 4,000 people every month coming in and raising their hand and saying, Kyle, I want to buy a car from you because they're on your site looking at your VDP. Like, and maybe you sell 150 or 250 or 350 cars, but that means you still have 3,500 people. Like, right? Like, what if you could more deeply engage them? And what if they had an experience that was 3 times better than the 9-11 other dealership websites they visited? You would have to assume that you're now way better positioned to capture more, influence more of those buyers and convert more of those buyers than if you spent $50,000 trying to target people that are in the market with this credit score, whatever that crap is, because you already have enough. Your total addressable market's already visiting your site. So we always try to think about like, it sounds super basic, but we always try to think about like, how do we just better influence that buyer on my site? Because clearly he's interested in buying from me.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, if you think about it, like take those 4,000 unique viewers that hit VDPs on my website. What if I just did a little bit better and got 1% more of them to convert to a car deal. All the way to a car deal. I'm not just talking about a lead. We're talking about 40 deals, y'all. Yeah. Who, what dealership? I'm getting pumped up. I'm going to go to town today, right? But like, what dealership wouldn't want 40 deals yesterday if they could just go in and go, I gave my customer a better experience online than the other 10 dealerships within a 2-mile radius of me.
It's a lot cheaper too.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Some stuff doesn't even cost as much. It's like something as simple as you look at the layout of your website, and if you don't like it, just call up the web provider and be like, I don't like this. Like, it's confusing the way it's architected, structured, the flow of it's super confusing. Like, do you have another layout? It could just be as simple as that. Like, why do we have 9 prices listed? Even me as a consumer, I still like don't understand that. It's crazy complex. It's like 33, but this rebate and that rebate, but now it's 28, but no, it's 24. There's some very simple tactical things that could be done on the VDP and honestly the SRP as well, because I think the SRP has been highly underinvested in, and hasn't been really innovated in. Like, it's the same, but you get more traffic on it. A lot of people do the quick views, right? Think about like the Amazon pages. Say you're looking for, I don't know, what's the last thing you want, a hat on Amazon or whatever, and there's like 30 of them. Like, that's probably Amazon probably thinks that's the most important page.
Yeah.
And they do that one click shop right from the search results. So I think there's a lot of stuff that dealerships should, that they can do that doesn't cost anything, but they're still stuck in the mindset of, and I think it's because they're subconsciously or consciously getting influenced by all the vendors that are calling, selling them stuff that is, detracting them or distracting them from like what truly matters.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so I go onto a dealership website yesterday and it was a buddy of mine. He was like, just inspect my SRP VDP. I got to the VDP. I'm not kidding you. On the little like sidebar, the call to action thing, 9 calls to actions, 4 different colors, and 5 different button formats. Like, what? Okay, yeah. On Amazon, I go, there's a add to cart and a buy now button. That's it, you know? Yeah. Now, I'm not saying that we need to have an add to cart and buy now button. I think, you know, my mentality has kind of been shifted a little bit, even just talking to you right now, but we probably need to make it a lot easier for the consumer to shop on our website. And not just that, every time you add another button or widget or anything like that, and I've been working with, you know, your team and other teams that have, you know, scripts on our website, you slow down the website. Yeah. Google says people bounce in 3 seconds from checkout, you know, if it doesn't refresh fast enough. 3 seconds, that's what you're dealing with. Okay, so how do I make my website quicker, my merchandising quicker? It's the same question we're asking in the showroom. How do I make it easier and quicker to shop? And we put all these barriers in front of our customers and then consequently, we put them in front of our employees too. Right, because we've created this barrier matrix that it takes to sell or buy a car, and it's just become so hard.
But see, you can do all that, like, but when they come into your dealership, though, like most people feel like, oh, it's going to be such a painful long process. You're still closing them at a super high rate, you know, right. like I don't know what you close them at, but you're still closing it at very, very high rates, higher than probably anybody closed, like higher than a retail store, somebody browsing like the Gap. Right, browsing whatever they might be browsing in that store, you probably close people buying a car at a much higher rate. And so though you can make it easy to shop and all that, and I think those are good steps, but as easy as it can be, if they're still hesitant, confused, uneducated, they're still not going to do it. And that's the benefit that you guys have when they come into the dealership, is you can completely obliterate that hesitancy they have, because you guys do a great job of having them feel the car. It's like they're a great car, and you can sit and feel and touch and experience it. So, but I think there's a lot of, I think most VDPs are pretty bad, but do you think dealer GMs, do you think they know? I think they know that. I mean, what do you?
I think there's a growing subset that know that. I think there's still some that are pretty oblivious to that.
Yeah. I mean, you think it's
just unfortunate, but that's what we're, I mean, that's what I'm trying to get visibility on. And I think you are too. It's like, hey, wake up, you know, let's change the game. Let's do something different so we can be better. And people actually want to do business with us and it's easier. Because I do think there's still a lot that they're going, oh, it's not good to, you know, have only 11 photos and 7 calls to action, and they're not high res and they're taken in the snow with, you know, with a flip phone. I don't know, you know?
Yeah, I know. I mean, do you think it's because Bruce, you met Bruce, bald guy, our sales, like the best salesman you ever meet. It's hilarious. But he always is like, oh, it's because the dealers never actually go on their own site. And they live in their world. They never go through buying a car because they're driving demos and they've been in the dealer world forever. So they never actually behave like consumer behaves. So as much as you tell them, they've never experienced it. So unless you experience it, you'll never know it. And I was like, they never go on their own site. I was like, no, they always go on their own site. But I think they never go to their site. But I think if they did, they always say, oh, put yourself in the shoes of the customer or the consumer. And I think most people can do that. But for dealerships, it's totally different because the person working at a dealership never has to. Right? Because they drive demos, or they get it right from the dealership, or they have a deal. So they never go through the real process. And usually I think people in the dealer world tend to stay in the dealer world. So it's not like they are in the dealer world, they leave and are in a different industry, and then they end up buying a car. So now they experience it and they have this revelation of how like messed up it is, how they thought, and then they come back to the dealer world and something changes. I really think that's like true, that unless they truly feel how it is to, and maybe they never can because they get cars. Oops. And they understand like what it is, you know, to buy a car, and they understand the trims and all that because they live in that world, that they'll never be capable of understanding what a consumer goes through. But I think that's a pretty big barrier to changing. I do see a lot of people that want to change and want to do better, but I still think there's this, like I told you at the beginning, I feel like there's this thing that prevents them from effectuating change. I don't know what it is yet. I haven't got my finger on it, but I will at some point.
Hey, maybe you and I both will at some point. I do think that there's a hesitancy to change. It may be because in 2020 and everybody got fat pockets, but it wasn't because we did anything magical. It's because there was a bull market. But I do think there's a hesitancy to change. I think that asking the question that you just asked is how do customers want to do business with us? How do they perceive doing business with us, and what's better for the customer? Not how do I want them to do business with me? You know, you have to go through digital retailing. No, do they want to go through that? You have to go through the car process like that. No, do they want to do that? Is the question that if we ask that, then honestly, our salespeople would get less pushback, right? Because these customers would, and these people that are wanting that need to do business with us, they need to buy a car, would actually want to buy a car from us. So I think that's a big deal. And I think you struck a chord there, and hopefully a lot of people heard that, because that's the question that we need to be asking more and more often in our industry, for sure.
Yeah. Spend less on advertising and focus on merchandising. You're probably sick of hearing me talk about merchandising, so I won't dive into it anymore.
No, that's a big deal, especially, and just so you know, Art, like they have a marketing product. And so it's kind of interesting to hear you say, you know, that's the mentality. And I love that mentality. So, man, I'm going to wrap it for today. Art, I am super happy that you joined me. I love the conversation. You challenged me on a couple of things. My wheels are spinning. So that's always good. That's what I love about these conversations.
It's all snowing outside. You got to clear those cars off.
Yeah. I gotta go get to that for sure. man. Well, I appreciate it. I love what you're doing. If you're not connected with Art, make sure that you are. He will try and sell you something, but he'll do it the right way.
Oh no. No, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I think it's good. Right? We need more of this stuff where you have different points of view and perspective, and some may or may not agree with it or have a different perspective, but I think that's what leads us to the best outcome.
Yeah. Art, if I'm gonna do, I always do the typical podcast thing. If people want to connect with you, what's the easiest way for them to connect with you? Is it LinkedIn? Is it an email? What is it?
Yeah, LinkedIn, email, cell number. It's just art@spincar.com, but you can just, Google. That's what we tell our employees when they ask a question that we think they can answer. We just tell them to Google it.
I love it. Well, cool, man. Well, thanks for coming on. Appreciate you coming on Contagious Podcast. Yeah. It's been a joy.
Yeah. Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate it.
Woo. Thank you so much for listening. Amazing episode today. I was encouraged by it. My mind started going. I've got some things that I've got to work on for our group, for the dealerships that I'm a part of here at Nelson Auto Group. I'm so grateful that you tuned into Contagious Podcast today. If you got anything out of this, make sure and write it down. Make some changes. Do something about it. Don't just listen and hear it to hear it. Do something. Also, tell someone about it. You can like, review, comment, share on any of the platforms that you're looking at this. Also, I encourage you to share this directly with people that you know. Get more people into the conversation. My whole belief is that in the automotive industry, we need more people talking, more people listening, and not less, so that we can push forward toward innovation, so that more people want to be a part of what we're doing, be employees, start careers in the automotive industry, as well as do business with us. And it's going to take a ton of innovation. But the way that contagious things work is it starts with you. It starts with you leading out in your own personal sphere of influence, and then those people leading out and those people leading out, and it grows exponentially as we go out and start to have these conversations. So one way that you can join the conversation is every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, we'll be on Clubhouse. We'll be talking about the topic of the week or anything that you are excited about in automotive innovation. We call it Contagious Conversations. So make sure and join that if you're not on Clubhouse. Also, follow, subscribe to the podcast, and join the conversation. This has been This has been Contagious Podcast, Contagious Conversations for Automotive Innovation. We'll see you next time.